When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Love this podcast because it crushes your dreams of getting rich quick.
They actually got me into reading stats for anything.
You're tuned in to the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Led by Andrew Sather and Dave Ahern.
Step-by-step premium investing guidance for beginners.
Your path to financial freedom starts now.
Starts now.
All right, folks, welcome to Investing for Beginners podcast. Today, we're going to continue our series on Back to the Basics. This is something we're going to do every Thursday for a while. We have about 20 shows lined up to talk about a variety of topics. Today's topic is going to be bankruptcies and value traps. Super exciting stuff. Actually, it is kind of fun. So we're going to talk about bankruptcies and value traps and what to look for and how to avoid them. So let's start with, what is a bankruptcy? Andrew, you are the bankruptcy guru. So what is a bankruptcy for investors? What do they need to know about bankruptcies?
Well, that sounds like a fun title, right?
The
bankruptcy guru, everybody's favorite person. So just in a nutshell, if you are buying stocks and the company goes in bankruptcy, 99% of the time you're going to lose all your money. And so that's just kind of the way the structure of companies are. There's different levels of ownership in the sense that, you know, you have the equity investor, which are the people who buy the stocks. They're going to participate in the upside of the business, but they're also going to participate completely in the downside if the business ever fails. And then the bondholders, they have a senior claim to the business's cash flows. And so because they are lending to a business, they might still get paid even if a business goes bankrupt, and it all gets decided on court. But the nutshell is if you're owning stocks and the company goes bankrupt, you're going to lose. So please avoid that because losing all your money is a lot, right?
Right. Very much so. Would it be safe to say this is the one way you can lose your whole investment?
Yeah.
So this is something you definitely want to avoid.
Yes.
At all costs.
Yeah. And you know, it happens. We haven't seen any big ones for a while, so, you know, consider ourselves blessed. But even the regional bank crisis, First Republic shareholders and Signature Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, and whoever the third one was.
I think it was Signature Bank. I think you're right.
It was a Signature, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Those shareholders all lost. So even though First Republic's now part of JP Morgan Chase, the shareholders themselves got completely wiped out.
Yeah, exactly. So in anticipation of our conversation today, I actually looked this up and I did some research and I found that last year there were 623 bankruptcies, according to S&P Global. And the largest ones were the banks that you mentioned. And I think it was called Bird. It was the company that it did the scooters. They declared bankruptcy as well. And so did WeWork finally.
Was Bird IPO'd? I don't know.
Or were
they
Yeah,
they were.
Yeah, it was a public company, so they declared bankruptcy.
And WeWork too, which was kind of an interesting that it took this long for them to finally kind of get to that point where they declare bankruptcy. But interestingly, Adam Neumann, who was the founder and CEO that was ousted, is now trying to buy the company back out of bankruptcy.
Interesting. That's kind of strange to me.
Right.
Interesting suggestion.
I'd be very curious to see if that actually comes to pass.
Yeah.
So how can a bankruptcy kind of affect like how people think of the market and investors? Like how can that impact investors other than losing their money?
I guess in what way?
Maybe made their perception, like their how they think about companies, you know, how they go about investing, you know, how can that kind of impact it?
It scares a lot of people off and people don't want anything to do with the stock market when stuff like that happens. Mm-hmm. Enron was a great example of that back in 06, 07, 08 timeframe. That was just a straight up accounting scandal and a straight up fraud. And it ended up happening that those numbers were completely fabricated and they were playing all these accounting tricks. And that was a big one for a lot of people because that company was like on the Forbes 100 lists. You know, their CEOs were celebrities. Everybody loved them. They had these presentations that everybody would tune into and all the employees were laughing and enjoying the ride. Unfortunately, you can't always 100% prevent fraud. And so that's why diversification is important as an investor. You never want to put everything in one basket.
No, for sure not. Beyond Enron, what are some other ones that were kind of big ones? It seemed like there was like a condensed period of time where there were some really big ones and then we've kind of gone a while since we've had any big ones.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a good history teacher, I would have something a little more organized. But two of the big ones that stood out to me was Circuit City and Blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Partly because if you were alive at the time, you were familiar with these businesses. And I think also partly that each bankruptcy tells a very unique story. Mm-hmm. And it goes to show that sometimes a bankruptcy is, you can kind of see it before it happened. Who was it? It was Bed Bath & Beyond recently. Mm-hmm. Feels like everybody kind of saw that one coming.
Right.
But a company like Circuit City, actually, that was really surprising. And even if you were astute and could look at the financials, that one might have shocked you.
Mm-hmm. I felt like Toys R Us kind of came out of nowhere too. Mm. I mean, it wasn't a company that I followed at all, but I certainly used, when my daughter was born, I certainly used Babies R Us a lot. So when that whole ecosystem failed, that to me caught me by surprise.
Yeah. I think I never really studied that story, but it seems like I've heard people say the whole being able to buy toys at Target and Walmart and then, you know, obviously Amazon coming later on, those things all took Toys R Us out of business, but there could have been other factors as well.
Right. So what do you feel like are the most, what are the biggest leading causes of companies going bankrupt?
So the causes are sort of like what they say about unhappy families. They say there's a million different reasons for an unhappy family, but only a few for a happy one. So it's very similar with businesses. Something I tried to do when I was first starting out, because I was terrified of losing money in a stock that goes bankrupt. To me, that was one of the big risks that I was worried about when I first started investing. So I went back and tried to look at a lot of the big name bankruptcies during the 21st century. And I looked at around 30 of them. And I haven't updated it since, crazy to say, like almost 10 years now. But looking at that list, the first 15 years of the 2000s, the symptoms were somewhat obvious. So like, as an example, a lot of these businesses had negative earnings and a lot of them went from positive earnings to negative earnings. And so that can be a pretty big, obvious, easy red flag that you can just say, I don't want to play that game. If somebody were to do that with these businesses, they would have avoided a lot of them. The other big symptom that's can be common is a lot of debt on the balance sheet. And depending on the company and depending on the timing, that can wipe out a business as well. Don't have time to search the whole stock market. Tired of waiting through endless information? Instead, get my trusted stock picks at valuespotlight.com.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Budgeting was always a challenge for me. I struggled to find the best way to keep track of all of my money, not to mention all the time tracking down receipts, cataloging expenses, and trying to figure out what went wrong with my air quote system until Monarch Money. Monarch Money allowed me to easily see what is going on with my finances, helping me get a better handle on my spending, budgets, and more. It's my go-to app every day, more so than my bank, because I can quickly see where I am with my budgets and spending, allowing me to invest more and spend time on the things that I want to do. It's my GPS for money. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor. Invite them to your account at no extra cost, and they'll get their own login info and a joint view of all of your finances. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. In fact, Monarch Money is one of the first to bring you direct Apple Card, Apple Cash, and savings syncing with the latest iOS 17.4 update. Now you can sync your wallet directly for seamless budgeting. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. That's monarchmoney.com/beginners for your extended 30-day free trial.
Right. The debt is one that I think it's an interesting conversation, because when I first got into investing, I felt like all debt was bad. But as I've learned, you know, like everything in finance, it depends. There's some nuance to it. And maybe we could talk a little bit about that, and maybe what is good debt, and maybe not necessarily what is bad debt, but maybe what could people look for to avoid that downfall for a company.
Now we're starting to speak my love language, and this is the part that makes any normal person's eyes glaze over.
All right.
There's several things, but I think a big one is the way that debt is, I'm blanking on the term.
Like, you know, is it structured or layered?
Layered, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the way that the maturities are, there's a term, staggered.
Staggered.
Staggered, there you go. I knew you would know that one. I feel like you've written a blog post about that one.
I think I have.
Yeah. So, you know, if a company have debt that's due, and if they can spread that out so that it's even instead of all coming due all at once, that can save a lot of trouble. That's one way from a debt perspective. I know you have some thoughts on it too. What would be some other ways for you?
I think, you know, looking at the not just the total number, but like you're saying, looking at kind of when the debt is due, and kind of if you kind of compare that with the company's free cash flow or the revenue and the income, that can give you a better sense of like how well they're managing the debt. But the other one that maybe is more of a air quote silent killer is interest payments. And so if a company runs up a big pile of debt, that's where it can also lead to trouble, because even though you may only owe, you know, I'll just use round numbers, even though you may only owe maybe $100 million in a year, they may have to pay $50 million in interest payments a year, or $100 million in interest payments. And let's say that their income is only $125 million total. Well, that's a really, really big expense for a company to try to cover. And so that becomes a really interesting, like how they manage, how they navigate that lack of funds to cover that. And that's where companies can get in trouble too, because then they can default on the debt and that can lead to bankruptcy as well, or at least a restructuring of the company, which is maybe not a total loss of your money, but it could be a big problem. And so that to me is one of the more silent killers. And what we're really talking about is when a company takes out a loan or debt, when they take out a bond payment, they owe interest payments to the people that loan them the money. So if you and I give Microsoft $100 each and they promise to pay us $5, you know, a month, then they have to pay us $10 a month. And if they can't make those payments, then they default on that $100 that we owed them. And now they owe us the $100 plus the $10 and however long that takes to pay us back. And that can accelerate when those debt payments are due. And that can be a big, big problem for companies. And that's why interest coverage ratio, which is basically measuring the interest the company pays versus the operating income that they generate for a year, then the higher that number is, the rate, the higher the number is, the better. And the closer to zero that is that can be a problem, especially because nobody knows when the next COVID's going to hit. And that was one of the big concerns about the shipping industry in particular with Carnival Cruises and some of those companies was how are they going to cover those interest payments, because they still owe that money. And now all of a sudden they don't have revenue. And so that's where having a strong balance sheet can come into play, because if you have enough cash on the balance sheet, then you can, in theory, use that to cover some of the debts while you're trying to get back on your feet. But that's not a fun place to be for a company, and certainly not a fun place to be as an investor. And so looking at not just the total debt payments or looking at how they have a staggered payments, but also the interest expense or the debt payments that they have to pay, that can be very critical to look at as well.
Interest expense is on my checklist. I have a short checklist for every stock, but yeah, it's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really important, and it's underrated and it's not very sexy, but it is definitely something that needs to be paid attention to.
It never is sexy until we have a crisis.
Right.
It's funny how all of a sudden everybody was looking at revolving line of credit and all of those things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, during April, May, June of 2020.
Right.
And then nobody looks at that stuff again now that we're out of the crisis.
Right. So exactly. Yeah. There was a company I wrote about on Seeking Alpha a few years ago, kind of during the height of the pandemic, that was one of the big red flags for me when I looked at their financials, was their interest coverage ratio was like, I don't know, 0.02 or something crazy like that, like super low. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, this is not, that's scary. That's scary, scary low. I think I read a few quarters later that the company was refinancing their debt and they were taking on additional debt to make sure that they had a cushion so they didn't have to deal with that. So I was like, yeah, that's a company I don't want to deal with. That goes into the too hard pile.
What's the best way to get started in the market? Download Andrew's ebook for free at stockmarketpdf.com.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Yeah. even if a company can refinance like that and they don't go bankrupt, to your point, they can change the structure of the company. And if they start issuing equity to try to cover up the difference that they're losing on, as a shareholder, you lose in that situation a lot of the time. So It is important to look at, even if you're not scared of a company going bankrupt.
Right.
It prevents situations like that.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's move on to the next kind of topic, and that's unveiling value traps. So what is a value trap?
Easiest definition would be a stock that looks cheap. Maybe it is cheap from a numbers basis, but it's cheap for a reason and will still lose you money even if you buy low on it. That's kind of how I would look at value traps.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel like they have any common characteristics or like any red flag indicators that could indicate a value trap?
Yeah, I mean, one that you mentioned a few episodes ago was a very high dividend yield.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally unsustainable. So that's a good one to look out for. I think declining revenues is a really good one to look for. Mm-hmm. If a company is shrinking instead of expanding, then all of the issues we just talked about with the debt and being able to refinance that debt, that all becomes a lot harder if your business is not growing. And then, you know, I mentioned the negative earnings. That's another good one. Again, you're not a fast growth, a young company, and you start losing money, you start hemorrhaging cash. It can compound and it can snowball in all the same ways that success and growth can compound and snowball. So can losses and business failures. So You have to be cognizant of those things and look out for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Who are some examples that you've seen in the market of value traps? I know one that screams to me.
Which one?
Oh, well, it's GameStop. GameStop, you know, before the meme craze, it screamed value trap.
Mm. Yeah, it had a very high yield at the time. Mm-hmm. A business that was not growing.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost a story for its own,
right.
Its own time.
For its own episode.
Circuit City, I think, kind of makes for a good example of this. At the time they were growing, one that kind of stood out to me from the various times I've looked at bankruptcies is Circuit City back in the day. They actually were growing at the time that they went bankrupt. And so that's a very nefarious, like, unexpected value trap situation. When you're opening stores and your revenues are going up, 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 you would never think that you would go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. But they actually did. And what happened was they had way too much inventory. And when they were not able to sell that inventory, they weren't able to cover their short-term expenses. And as that came with the financial crisis, the two coincided, as you tend to see bad things like that tend to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so because they had too much inventory, they couldn't convert it to cash. And then they had too many short-term expenses that they needed to cover, they went bankrupt. And so one way you can look for a risk like that is to look at the quick ratio, which is you're looking at the company's short-term assets, you're comparing it to their short-term liabilities or expenses, and then you are subtracting inventory. So you're basically saying, what's the worst case? If we can't sell our inventory, do we still have enough liquidity to cover our short-term expenses? And so that's one way. I don't use it as like a hard and fast rule, but I use it to make sure I understand if there's a risk there. That if the quick ratio is not looking good, then I hope that they have commercial paper or some other way to shore up liquidity in case you get a financial crisis and you're not able to sell your inventory. And so in the case of Circuit City, it was a very, very, I think, under the radar value trap. I feel like for me, if I was investing at the time, I probably would have fallen victim just like a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The ways that you can spot a value trap or the things that you can see will kind of depend company to company. And, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, two or three kind of off the top of my head that have been like the deep value investor darlings. GameStop was one, Best Buy has been one, and Macy's has been another, where the company or investors look at them and they're optically cheap and they have some characteristics that could make them appealing. Macy's, for example, one of the things that people like about Macy's is they own all that land and it has value. So if the company has to liquidate, that's worth something. But if you look at the number of stores they have to continue to close and the revenues continuing to decline, all those things just lead to more of a, I feel like more of a falling knife than opposed to a potential turnaround situation that you can get in cheap and benefit when the company kind of turns things around. Because it feels like when you look at value traps or companies that could potentially be value traps, one of the I guess striking things to me has always been that whatever business line they're in, it's become less and less relevant or less and less popular. And you just see a gradual overall decline in the revenue of the company. I'm not talking like from one year to another, like, you know, Tesla year over years, you know, delivery of cars is down. That doesn't mean that they're a value trap. It's more of a like a 5 or 10 year trend when you start to see things start to continually fall and the company can't pivot to something else. And I'm thinking of GameStop in particular. They just, the way that their business model was set up, they just really couldn't and haven't been able to pivot to something else that would allow them to sustain themselves. And so beyond the mean part of it, that's really why they've been on the struggle bus for a long time. And kind of the same with Macy's. And Best Buy has been kind of off and on over the last few years. But I think all those things really indicate that a lot of times, you know, we've talked about markets being efficient or not efficient, but sometimes when a company is cheap, it's cheap for a reason. And, you know, people don't want to buy it, or it's cheap because it's, you know, the business is starting to decline.
Yeah, that type of stocks, I don't play those games anymore. If you're buying a distressed company, you really have to buy low and sell high. Mm-hmm. And not saying I think I would find it a lot of fun, and I have, but it doesn't fit what I'm trying to do moving forward. And so it does become, I think it's a place of opportunity, but it's also a place of a lot of danger if you're trying to mix the game you're playing with the game that you think you're playing.
Right. Right. So if investors are out there going, okay, this all sounds great, how do I start avoiding, what do I start looking for in companies? Is there any sort of financial analysis or, and you know, any sort of other tools besides the quick ratio that you mentioned that could help us start to avoid either bankruptcies or value traps?
I think the easiest one, if you're a beginner stock picker, because it's a lot. Like I said, there's not any one thing you can hang your hat on. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the best way to identify value traps is to be a good stock picker. And so this part of that will come with experience, and part of it will come with knowledge as you continue to learn and grow. So if you're a beginner and you're just first starting out, having a hard and fast rule like, if the company goes negative earnings, I'm just going to not even deal with it. I think that can be hugely helpful because you've really covered a lot of the downside by having a simple rule like that. That would be a place to start. And then as you move forward, if you start nerding out on this stuff and you're diving through annual reports and you're like, hey, this is a lot of fun, then I don't really need to give you advice, because I think you'll, just through a natural curiosity, you'll start to pick up more and more and more. And the learning never ends. I mean, decade or two ago, it was Circuit City. Before that, it was Blockbuster. You know, all of those had different lessons. And this decade's bankruptcy will be a completely different story as well. And some of us will see it and some of us won't. And that's what makes the stock market interesting.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's part of what makes it fun, is it's the every company is a new adventure. And it's a challenge to look at the numbers, because the numbers are going to tell you a story. And it's our job as an analyst, as a stock picker analyst, is to decipher what that story is telling us. And sometimes there will be hidden clues, and sometimes it's going to be, you know, glaringly obvious. And I think, I guess a couple things that kind of really come to mind when I think about these ideas is, number one, you don't have to swing at every pitch. So remember that when you're going through a company and you like some things about it, but there's some other things you don't like about it, you can pass. You do not have to. Just because you start reading about a company does not mean that you have to go all the way and end up buying it and invest in it for the next 12 years. If there's something about it you don't like, whatever it may be, you don't like the brand label, I mean, it could be anything, and you can pass on it. And then I guess the other part of it too is having a few tools in your toolkit to look at, as like Andrew was saying, the interest coverage ratio is a ratio that he uses on his checklist. And if the company doesn't meet it, he moves on. And it may not be quite that simple, but it can be a part of what you're using. Debt to equity ratio can be one. The quick ratio that Andrew was talking about can be another. You can look at revenue growth. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can look at companies, determine what is going to be eligible for you to continue to look at and eventually invest in. But starting to develop, I think, a short checklist to help you avoid some of these things can be really helpful. And frankly, the more you do it, the more you're going to get better at it. And the more mistakes you make and learn from those mistakes, the better you can get at it as well.
Yep.
All right, folks. Well, with that, we will go ahead and wrap up our conversation on bankruptcies and value traps. I hope you enjoyed our Back to the Basics series today. Come back next Thursday. We'll have another Back to the Basics for you. So with that, we'll go ahead and sign us off. You guys go out there and invest with a margin of safety. Emphasis on the safety. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you all next week.
We hope you enjoyed this content. 7 Steps to Understanding the Stock Market shows you precisely how to break down the numbers in an engaging and readable way with real-life examples. Get access today at stockmarketpdf.com. Until next time, have a prosperous day.
The information contained is for general information and educational purposes only. It is not intended for a substitute for legal, commercial, and/or financial advice from a licensed professional. Review our full disclaimer at einvestingforbeginners.com.